And now it is time for Aging Well, brought to you today by the Institute of Gerontology at Wayne State University and right in Philippus. Our guest today is Dr. Jennifer Ward Betts, who is Assistant Professor of Economics, working with the Institute of Gerontology as a faculty fellow, and much of her research revolves around time and money and how people spend their money as they grow older. And she's also going to talk about how changes in health will affect people's wealth as they age and ways to offset those financial impacts. This should be most interesting. And if you have questions along the way, you're always invited to join with us at 248-557-3300. Doctor, good morning.
Good morning.
Now, I got a question before we do anything else. Do you prefer to be called Dr. When people with hyphenated names, you could either be called Dr. Betts or Dr. Ward Betts, or I might call you Jennifer.
Well, normally if I was going to have you call me something more formal, I'd say Dr. Ward Betts.
Okay.
But today, let's go with Jennifer.
I like that.
Okay.
You're my kind of gal. Okay, you're my kind of doctor. and this is a fascinating conversation because we have lots and
Absolutely.
Lots of people like myself who are well into their senior years. And what kind of activities do older adults like me spend their time on? And how is that different from the ways that they passed time when they were younger?
Well, as you might imagine, if we looked across the whole life course, we're going to see a whole lot of changes as your kids grow up and leave the household and those sorts of things. But what I've looked at in some of my research focuses more on the changes that happen just as people pass from those years just pre-retirement ages into the ages that are just post-retirement. By that, I'm thinking,
so you're talking
sort of
from
average.
about 50...
I'm thinking 50 to 50, you know, like say between 55 and early 60s, those folks, versus those who were post 65.
And the patterns change dramatically from the 50s to the 60s?
They do a bit.
Wow.
And of course, as we would expect, as people retire, they spend a whole lot less time in market work, right? And so the interesting question is, where do you reallocate that time to across other kinds of activities? And so we might expect, of course, that men and women are going to reallocate their time in different ways, and part of that story is because women, some of them were not working in the market before. But I've seen some interesting things in looking at some time use data that we have gotten in fairly recent years, and so we're able to look at these things in a bit more detail now than in the past. But I see, for example, that men increase their time that they spend in lawn and garden care, and they're also increasing time that they're spending in housework and food preparation after retirement. Women are also increasing time in housework and food preparation, but another interesting result, I thought, for men is that they're increasing their time in doing shopping activities, and women are decreasing their time doing that. So maybe men are doing more of the grocery shopping and that kind of stuff after retirement.
That's what happened in our
paradigm change there.
That's
and also there's a little bit of an increase in the time that men are spending doing volunteer work and also giving care and help to others, like friends and family members and so on.
That's
not so true for women. And of course, both men and women are spending more time doing socializing and leisure and things like that. But women are increasing their time in sport and exercise and recreation, those kinds of activities, and men are not.
It sounds a little bit off the top of my head. It sounds like we're changing places.
Role reversal.
The men and the women are you know.
Maybe, and I think, you know, as more cohorts move into these older age categories, we'll probably see a little bit different patterns because now, you know, younger cohorts of men are doing more around the house and stuff like that than used to be the case, where couples were specializing more and the women were doing most of that stuff and not working in the market.
And the great line, the women's work is never done. I remember that.
That's right. But now she's apparently shifting some of it to her husband after he retires.
Well, you know, when I married Maggie, and because of doing this show, and we talk about recipes and household hints and all that stuff, I became the head of the kitchen.
Yeah.
So I did a lot of the cooking, and but that's because I had the recipes and I knew how to do this, and I'm still in charge of the kitchen, and I do the food shopping because of that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really because of this show. Otherwise, I don't think I would have changed on that. I'd have let Maggie do that.
Well, my husband is completely in charge of the kitchen. He's a very good cook. He's studying to be a chef.
Oh.
And I'm a very lucky woman, I realize, and I can hardly go food shopping without him because I've gotten dependent on that, and I'm not sure that I know how to pick a proper tomato anymore.
Not sure what he's going to cook anyway.
Right, exactly. So he has to choose the vegetables, and I'm completely happy to just step out of the kitchen and let him have it.
Well, it gives you time to do your research work, too.
Exactly.
We are talking with Dr. Jennifer Ward Batts. She is an economist at Wayne State University, and also working with the Institute of Gerontology. If you have questions for Jennifer as we go along, join with us. We have lines open at 248-557-3300. And, of course, this program wouldn't even be on the air if it weren't for the wonderful folks underwriting it, the folks at Wright and Philippus.
I'm A.J. Philippus, president of Wright & Philippus. People come through our doors needing items such as portable oxygen, wheelchairs, and diabetic shoes. But when they leave, they have much more than a medical product. They leave with a better quality of life. That's our daily mission at Wright & Philippus, and it's why we'll work harder to provide you with the caring service you'd expect from the area's leading home health care company. Over the past 60 years, we've earned a reputation for providing the best service in the industry. It will always be our company's number one goal, and is our commitment to you. If you or a family member need anything for home health care, please visit the Wright & Philippus nearest you. We have more than 30 locations throughout the state to serve you.
Wright & Philippus, first to serve your home health care needs.
Now, you may be like me and you don't go online, so you can't go to firsttoserve.com, but if you want to talk to the leaders in the home health care field, you pick up the telephone and you dial 1-800-482-0222. We are talking with Jennifer Ward Batts about changes as we get older. And, Jennifer, after people retire, and, of course, more and more people, the baby boomers, are getting to that age and retiring, what kinds of productive things are they doing? Does their relationship to time change at all when they retire?
Yeah, well, we were just talking about some of the different categories of time that people increase or decrease time spent in when they retire.
Yeah.
But one thing that I would like to emphasize in those changes is that, you know, I think a lot of times when people retire, they feel like they're leaving their career job and they don't feel like they're making as much of a contribution as they were making before. But I think that we have to recognize a lot, like the, you know, some feminists have been encouraging us to do for a long time, to recognize unpaid work as work, and that really contributes to the welfare of people in our society. And I think that people who are retired and no longer working in the market are doing a lot of those things. They're caring for grandchildren. They're doing a lot of volunteer work. They're helping others, either their spouses, other family members, neighbors, and people through their church and that kind of thing. And so those things are contributing to the well-being of others, and so I think that we really have to recognize those as productive activities, increased productive time that they're spending
home. Are these mostly women doing this, or are these men too?
Men are doing these kinds of things as well, and we see, as I said a little bit earlier, that we're seeing an increase, for example, for men when they retire in the time that they spend caring for and helping others, but actually women are decreasing that time. So you might think that maybe there's some sort of a substitution of men, you know, are doing a little bit more time with the grandkids because now they have more time available or something like that.
Just broadening your horizons.
Yeah.
Just before you came on the air, we were talking with one of our neighbors who is a regular caller and a wonderful gal named Lucy, and she always calls from her daughter's house where she's watching the two grandchildren.
Yeah.
And
this is very valuable to
her children.
But this
is extremely valuable for her daughter.
Right.
And I've always put a gold star on her forehead for that.
And if we counted the value of that and added it to GDP, GDP would go up a lot, but we don't count it.
No, they don't count it.
Because nobody's getting paid for it, right? Nevertheless, we have to consider that that's a very valuable contribution.
Oh, there are so many
her
things
her daughter
like
and husband
that.
Are figuring that out.
Right.
Volunteer work all over the place. There are so many ways that people volunteer, and that increases as you get older then, huh?
Yeah,
or as you retire.
Yeah,
like
as you
say.
Retire because you have more time available. That's freed up from less time in market
the
work.
The one thing I always thought was good about that was that when you retire, you've got an awful lot of time on your hands, and I've seen guys really go bananas when they retire because they're not used to sitting around and looking, at the walls.
Yeah.
They're always busy, especially professional people.
Mm-hmm.
And with me, I don't know if I'll ever retire, but I never have enough time because I read. I love to read, and I've got stacks and stacks of books and magazines that I'm never going to get through them all. So I know that I'm never going to buy, and I'm a musician, so I can always play my piano.
So you've got plenty of things to fill your time.
I've got all kinds of things.
For people without those hobbies, they just need to go and find some volunteer opportunities that uses their skill.
Well, we do quite a bit of volunteering, too.
That people can look forward to doing as they start to settle into these years now.
That's right, that they should take heart in the fact that this is productive and that they're not really less productive, they're just not getting paid for it anymore.
They're not getting paid for it, but it is very productive, and it's very ennobling to you, too. When you do these things, you feel better about being alive.
Yeah, I think so.
We're talking with Dr. Jennifer Batts Ward. Jennifer Ward Batts. Excuse me. And we're going to talk about the health factors of aging in just a moment. But speaking of that, as we get older, almost everybody runs into some problems with their hearing. And we've got a wonderful company, Cruz Hearing Aid Service, that can help you. And we've got Joshua to tell you about it.
I'm Joshua Cruz, president of Cruz Hearing. Bob Allison is one of thousands of patients that we've helped hear better over the past two decades. A few months ago, when Bob wasn't hearing as well as he should have, he visited our clinic and had a consultation with my father, Felix. It was determined at that time Bob needed new hearing aids. Bob is now wearing the newest advanced digital hearing aids and is doing great. Not hearing as well as you'd like? We can help you too, just like we helped Bob.
Thank you, Josh, and they indeed did help me, and they've got all kinds of hearing aid equipment in all price ranges, and the best thing that they do is to give you a very, very thorough hearing aid test, and that doesn't cost anything. That's free. So the thing that you should do is to make an appointment and go to one of their offices. They have an office in Farmington Hills and an office in Taylor, and take that test and find out what your problem is, and then they can tell you what can be done about it. They have a wonderful toll-free number, 1-877-456-CRUZE, C-R-U-Z. That's 1-877-456-2789. Or you can go to their website, cruzhearing.com. Jennifer, we were just talking about aging and health, and as people age, I suspect the health problems become much more common. And some of your research, I know, is about how changes in health can affect wealth, or generally the resources that people have available to them for their future. So what are some of the ways that changes in health affect people's wealth?
Well, there are lots of different mechanisms, and a couple of obvious ones are, first off, that obviously people may encounter direct medical costs that they have to pay out of pocket for health care and, drugs, doctors, and so on, if they have some kind of a new health event, a heart attack, a stroke, onset of diabetes, and things like that. But there are a lot of other things that we might not think of that are perhaps less direct, but maybe not less important. One of them is that they lose productivity in both paid and unpaid work. And so, for example, if they're working in the market and they have to reduce their hours or maybe even stop working altogether, then they're going to lose the income from that work. But also if they're doing unpaid work, if they're doing household production, which is, of course, the case for a lot of women, then that also is, as we were saying before, a valuable contribution. If they're not doing it, somebody else is going to have to do it. And so, you know, you have to either hire somebody to do it, or the other spouse has to pitch in and do more, or so on and so forth. And so there are ways that that may affect your wealth also, especially if you end up hiring out some services. And also people just might change their behavior in some ways, because either they think that their life expectancy is now less than they thought it was before, say they had a heart attack. And so in that case, maybe they would just spend more because they don't think they have so long to live to spend down their assets. But on the other hand, they might be worried about more medical expenses that they might had not expected to have late in life, and so they might go the other direction on
maybe
that.
We can get a little more specific about what kinds of health problems you're studying in this research. Are you talking about colds and flu, or more major diseases?
I'm talking generally about more major kinds of illnesses and events. So really talking about generally kind of major things such as having a heart attack or having a stroke as examples of acute events. Or we also have data on people's chronic illnesses, like if they have heart disease, emphysema, diabetes, and things like that. And we can follow in some of the data that I use, we can follow people over a long period of time. And so we can see, and this is particularly important for the chronic illnesses, to see how those play out over time.
Now, chronic illnesses. We had somebody calling today asking about an arthritis cure, and that's a chronic condition.
Yeah, and arthritis is actually one of the things that we measure in this data as
well. I would think so, because almost all of us get it. I've got it all everywhere.
Yeah, and it affects a lot your ability to do what we call ADLs, activities of daily living, that are important for you to be able to get by independently without help from someone else.
It even affects the way I play piano, because my fingers don't work as well as they used to. They're all stiff.
Right. You can't play those really hard pieces anymore, huh?
Or the quick ones.
I don't know, fast one. And not only that, I can't play my guitar. I was also a jazz guitarist, and I can't get my hands around the neck anymore.
Yeah.
There are some changes that happen,
That's absolutely true.
And I want to talk to you about whether the effect on wealth is bigger if it's the husband or if it's the wife. We're talking with Dr. Jennifer Ward-Betts, and if you would like to talk to Jennifer, our lines are open for you. We're talking about, she's really an economist, but talking about how the economy and your aging affects things like your wealth and your health and all that. She's doing a lot of research down at the Institute of Gerontology. And you can talk with her if you have questions. 248-557-3300. We'll be back in a minute and continue this conversation. But speaking of health, let me talk about dental health. And there's not a better dentist anywhere than Apple Dental in Warren. And I don't know whether you have a need for a dentist, but if you do, or let me say this, when you do, there's nobody better than Dr. Mark Cohn. He can do everything from a simple cleaning of your teeth all the way up to dental implants, and not only that, he does it very gently and very well, and he's got a nice new patient special. For new patients, you get a complete dental examination, including all the x-rays and a cleaning of your teeth for $99. You will love Dr. Cohn and Apple Dental in Warren. They're on Hoover Road, north of the Reuther Freeway, so they're easy to get to. They're handicap accessible. And here's the telephone number to call, 586-751-6868. Apple Dental in Warren, 586-751-6868. Jennifer, what is the impact on wealth? Is it bigger depending on whether the husband gets sick or the wife?
Well, that depends on exactly how you look at it, but I think it's an interesting result, because I think most people would expect for it to be bigger if the husband gets sick, because he's the main breadwinner, right? But it turns out that there are very significant effects also if the wife gets sick, even if she's a homemaker, because her productive output is not as well insured as his is. So, for example, if he becomes disabled after having a stroke, he can probably collect Social Security disability insurance if he's not old enough to retire with his full benefit. And he might also have some shorter long-term disability insurance through his employer. But if she's a homemaker, then there's generally no insurance policy to cover her reduced productivity if she's sick. And so the family sort of has to self-insure for those kinds of things. And so it turns out that because perhaps of this reduced level of insurance coverage of the productive capacity of the wife, that there are pretty substantial changes in wealth if she gets sick as well. And so if you've taken out the effect of retirement, you know, after if people retire early, then this is going to reduce household wealth. But if you've already taken that effect into account, then we actually see that health shocks to the wife have a bigger impact on future, on household wealth than those to the husband.
That's interesting. You know, there we've been talking about various ways about you know, working less hours or not working at all or early retirement. Does one or do any of these stand out as the most problematic? I mean, is one more important than another?
Well, I think that early retirement can be a pretty big hit on your total resources for the rest of your life, and one reason is that you're contributing less to Social Security, and so your ultimate benefit from that is going to be lower. Perhaps you're contributing less to your private pension, so that's going to reduce your pension benefit, perhaps. But also a lot of people will tend to start drawing their Social Security benefit earlier if they retire early.
Yeah, we've talked about that a number of times. What's your take on getting the early Social Security?
I think that everybody needs to make that decision very carefully, but individually, because if you have the average life expectancy, then Social Security is what we call actuarially fair, which means that it sort of doesn't really make a difference if you claim early or claim later, because if you claim later, you'll get a bigger monthly benefit, but since you're claiming later, you're getting it for a shorter period of time, a fewer number of years, right?
Right.
But if you have...
But we're living longer.
Exactly. And so that's what everybody has to assess for themselves. And if they think they're going to live particularly long, say because their relatives did, then they might want to wait and claim later, because that higher monthly benefit that they get from claiming later, they're going to get it for a long time. Whereas if they think they're not going to live much longer, by all means claim early, because... If you have a short life expectancy, then getting the bigger benefit for a lot of years doesn't really.
So it depends on what kind of a health situation you're in.
Yeah, and sort of your own subjective probability of living to certain ages.
What's the normal life expectancy right now? Is this 78 for men?
I think it's around 80 for men and 84, but that's life expectancy at birth. And
at birth, okay.
Right, and
so what do you say about people who are in their 60s? Then how should they figure?
Well, of course, that depends on their
health.
Current health and
okay,
so on.
Yeah.
But obviously, we're seeing a lot more people living to be past 100 years old.
Oh, I read the obits, and I'm amazed at how many people are in their late 80s and 90s and even 100. But a lot of 80s and 90s now, which you'd never used to see
that
before.
And I think you really have to look at your own behaviors in your life and your own lineage, you know. How long did your grandparents live to be and so on?
We've got Helen in Southfield with a question. And Helen, good morning. You're on the air with Jennifer.
Good morning. I'm sorry that I missed most of your program up to now. I'm sure you mentioned some interesting things about seniors and how to deal with it. I have a question that has always bothered me. I'm a senior. I'm 75 years old. And had some health problems. And I know down the road I'm going to need help in my house or wherever I'm at. And when I sit down to figure out the cost of it, this presents a problem for me, I think, and maybe for others as well. For example, if I were to need someone 7 days a week to help me, even like 4 hours a day, and the going cost, as I hear, is like $20 an hour. And if you figure it up what that costs on a weekly basis, someone just said maybe it's $500 a week or maybe $2,000 a month. In addition to all your other expenses of keeping up your house and your food and everything else, what's the best thing for people to do when they come into the situation? You don't want to go to a nursing home unless you have to. And you may have to go into assisted living. And assisted living, which I have inquired about a little bit.
Very expensive.
Most of those are like $3,000 a month. So I'm talking about $3,000 a month for assisted living, which does not cover, which is, will not cover your medication. It doesn't cover your other costs of insurance and whatever else you have to pay, type of thing.
Well, what do you think, Jennifer?
And then there's additional $2,000 a month for help. How do you get around this health business?
Yeah, well, I think this is a big problem, and it turns out actually that this is less of a problem with people with fewer resources, because they can qualify for government assistance through Medicaid, which will cover some home health care workers. In fact, my great aunt is a great beneficiary of this, and I appreciate, and she does, that she's able to stay in her home and live independently because somebody comes and helps her a couple of hours a day. But if you have resources, and you know, and you have some significant assets, either savings, your home, and stuff like that, until you draw those down, you don't qualify for that. But one thing you can rest assured is that after you draw those down and you do qualify, the government will kick in and help with those expenses. And I think that there's some increased recognition on the part of some policymakers that it's less expensive for us to try to keep people in their homes and to give them a little bit of assistance than it is to put them in nursing homes. And so I hope that we'll see on the part of policymakers more attention to trying to help seniors to be able to do that without, you know, completely bankrupting them.
But what you're indirectly saying is that individuals, if they do have a few more pennies, so they don't have to go into under Medicaid.
You're on your own.
You are on your own.
That's right.
Now,
you just have to do it as inexpensively as you can until you draw down those resources. And at that point, you know, just make. And you might talk to a financial advisor about, you know, what you can do to sort of get some of your assets out of your name so that you can qualify for government assistance with this as well.
Yeah.
But you have to do that pretty well in advance because there are certain rules about that.
So basically you have to just, you'll be on your own and you'll have to find out what's the most reasonable ways that you can do this, or who you can hire at the most reasonable to take care of those needs.
Ellen, I hope that helps you. We're getting almost out of time.
Anyhow, thank you. I'm sorry I didn't listen to your whole program.
That's okay. Thank you very much. I think we're probably going to have Jennifer back. and we'll be back to wrap everything up in just a moment, but after these words from Hospice.
At Hospice of Michigan, we hear stories of people in the sunset of their lives. After 30 years, we know when life is most fragile, important things become crystal clear. These stories are too beautiful to let them slip away. Our series, Stories at Sunset, captures experiences of husbands, wives, children, and nurses. At sunset, they were there.
The picture says it all, said the nurse. A small dog, the kind with very short hair and perky ears, has the prime location, perched in the bed on top of his owner's legs. The owner was our patient. The day before, he asked our team to take him home. The simplest request. He wanted to die at his house, in his own bed, near his wife, his daughter, and his dog. The Hospice of Michigan team helped the family prepare, bringing everything they needed to help him through the end. In the photo, our patient is in his bed, under crisp green and white sheets, his own sheets. His wife and daughter sit with him. They hold his hands. And there is the dog, comfortable and comforting. He seems to know his role. The picture says it all.
Not all hospices are the same. If someone you love has a serious illness, call Hospice of Michigan anytime at 888-247-5701. That's 888-247-5701. Visit HOM.org or ask your healthcare professional to refer you.
Jennifer, we're just plain out of time. Our theme is, and we got to have you back because this is interesting, and I've got lots more questions to talk to you about.
Well, I've enjoyed it, and I'd be happy to come back.
Thank you very much, and say hello to everybody down at the IOG.